Hello, welcome to the Advisor Pack Monthly Session. I'm Mark Little. This is the time each month where we get together and deal with issues that you're struggling with. Each month, I get a slew of questions from advisors related to lead generation, lead conversion, and client service. This program is primarily about client service, but I'll take questions on any topic, and I'll only answer if your question is something that I've actually had success with. So give it a shot. If you're struggling with anything in your business, it could be struggling with a client. It could be struggling with client acquisition. You could be struggling with a team member. Just share with me what your obstacles are, and we'll see. I mean, I've had success in many, many areas of my business, mainly because I made every mistake in the world. So I think part of my asset for you is that I've been in this business 40 years and I've made so many mistakes. I can help you navigate through avoiding blind alleys and avoiding mistakes. And of course, creating intellectual shortcuts to success. Each month, I select usually one or two questions, occasionally three questions that I think would be the most relevant to all of you. Okay. And this month, we had a really good one come in. And it gives me an opportunity to talk about something that we talk about two or three times every year. There's always an occasion to talk about the implementation meeting. So we'll get into that in this session in a minute. But, you know, what is the implementation meeting? Well, it's the first meeting after a client has hired you. And the purpose of the meeting is to clearly establish roles, like what's my role as an advisor, what's your role as a client. It's to establish ground rules. So one thing that I've discovered that most financial advisors do not do up front is draw clear boundaries. And part of that is making your advisor pact pledge, which is the keystone of this methodology that we're teaching in delivering truly comprehensive financial services. The front end of that is to make a very bold, radical pledge to your clients. And the pledge is designed, and we've got data on this, the pledge that we train you to make, the promise that you make to your ideal clients covers four areas. And these happen to be the four things that affluent clients have given up finding in financial advisors. So here you are up front promising four things that the more successful, the more affluent the client, the more they've just given up on finding any advisor anywhere that is able and willing to deliver these four things. And here you are up front in the implementation meeting, the first meeting after you've been hired, making this bold promise to do these four things that many clients had just dismissed as being unattainable. And so here you are. But there is also a part of this implementation meeting where you set other ground rules. And that's where this question comes in. So this question came in from a younger advisor course. For me, a younger advisor's, you know, 35, 45 years old. But he says, I acquired my first ideal client 3 months ago and was excited. So congratulations for that. That's always, it's always a high point. You know, you acquire a new ideal client and all was going well until now. Just last week, we met for the initial progress update meeting, and you'll see in a minute, if you're new to our program, we recommend that you implement our meeting frequency with clients, which is called the three meeting process. But you'll see in a minute, one of the meetings in our process is called the initial progress update. And this advisor is just saying, you know, I was hired by the advisor. I had an initial meeting with them after I was hired, and now I'm at the initial progress update, which in our process is the third time you've met with them since you've been hired. Okay. So just last week, we met for the initial progress update, and this couple began melting down about the investment markets. Oh my gosh. Okay. Emotional clients. Here we go. They're concerned about world events. They think we might even be teetering on the edge of or the brink of World War III. Okay. And they're worried about the future of our economy and the world economy. And they have a feeling, you know, that feeling, they have a feeling that the markets could drop significantly within the next couple of years. And they want me to do something to protect their investments. And they told me this is why they hired me. Mark, what would you recommend that I do? Okay. So I've been here, done that. What do they say? Bought the t-shirt. I know this very, very clearly. And it's because of this situation and many situations like this that start to kind of unwind an otherwise very good client relationship. It's why I structured the implementation meeting. Okay, so the implementation meeting, as I just mentioned, it's the first meeting with an ideal client after you've been hired. Now, I mentioned, I qualified. I said, ideal client. Is it that you don't, let's say your firm accepts profitable, non-ideal clients. We're perfectly okay with that in our methodology. We just don't teach much when it comes to how to serve them, but we do have a proposed model for serving non-ideal clients, and we won't get it into it this meeting other than to say, you've got a team that you've built as a result of being in this program and delivering truly comprehensive financial services to ideal clients. So we think that's capacity. You could serve some non-ideal clients, but the question is, what could you be doing that wouldn't be a distraction to growing and acquiring ideal clients? Well, how about this? You have a team that could develop an overarching strategy for a non-ideal client. And that's what we recommend that you do. You delegate to your team 100%, which means you don't do a thing. You don't lift a finger to create this plan for a non-ideal client. But rather, you charge a large sum. We recommend $20,000. So, and certainly not below $10,000. So let's say you charge $20,000 and your team creates over the course of, you know, a couple of months, a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, exactly like you prepare for your ideal clients, but it's 100% delegated to your team. You charge $20,000 and then you wipe your hands of all obligation to that non-ideal client. In other words, don't commit to future obligations to them. Just commit that whenever they come back to update their plan, which you recommend that they do annually, you know, that you'll be happy to update their strategy for $20,000 again. So anyway, that's fine. And so am I saying that you don't have an implementation meeting if you've got a business model that accepts profitable non-ideal clients? No, you should. I think you should always have an implementation meeting to lay the groundwork with a new client, the immediate meeting after you're hired. So what is the implementation meeting? Well, we're going to cover it in great detail, but let me tell you, as we go through this and you see the steps of how you carefully create a framework for the how well this relationship will run with this client and you set this up front, it's going to occur to you, wait a minute here. I've been in the business for a while. I have not done some of this for my current clients. So I want you to relax. As I go through this, if you miss doing any of this that we're about to cover with any ideal client or any client, you can conduct this implementation meeting at any time. All right. I don't care if the client's been a client of yours for 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 years, you can pause and hit the reset button and you can conduct the implementation meeting call it a refresher on how things work best in this relationship, but you can do this at any time. And in essence, what you're doing is you're setting the ground rules and the expectations for how this relationship will function at a very high level, which when ideal clients are being honest with themselves, this is what they want most. They want to achieve some things. They have some expectations of this relationship with you, but in the end, they want it to run smoothly and effectively. They want a functional relationship. If they're going to be paying all this money to you, they want it to unfold smoothly. All right, so let's look at the three meeting process. I'm not going to go through this in great detail, but I will say this. Up at the top, you see a meeting called the initial client interview. Let's call that the meeting where you get hired. Now, some of you, it's a couple of meetings. A few of you I've talked to have three meeting process. I implement Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap. So that first meeting at the top of this meeting structure that we call the three meeting process, the initial client interview for me and for many of you that do the same, we call this the financial roadmap meeting. Okay. This is Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap. It occurs in the initial client interview. You sit down with a client, you go through the financial roadmap experience, if that's your initial client interview process. And in 1 hour, you get a client to the point where they convey to you what they're trying to achieve. They've shared all of their financial documents in the very first meeting. And in an hour or less, they are at the point where they are at the point to decide whether they're a good fit to hire you or not. And so that occurs in the initial client interview. Let's say that is just hypothetically the meeting where you get hired. Now, let me pause a second and describe hired, because I have clients, financial advisor clients, who get confused on this. They tell me, oh, I just acquired a new client. I'm like, great, great. Run me through how you, how the money part's working. And they say, oh, well, they kind of run me through how they collect fees from clients. And let's say, hypothetically, they say, well, I charge $36,000 a year. And I collect $12,000 of that up front before I get started. And a client just agreed to pay that. And I'm like, wait, but you have received the money, right? You have the $12,000 from the client to get started. Well, no. That'll be in the next meeting, in the implementation meeting. We will collect that from them and then we'll move forward. And I'm like, okay, well, then they're not really a client. All right. So they've agreed to become a client. But, that's kind of like getting ready to get ready to get busy. You're not working for them yet. You shouldn't be working for them yet until you've received enough money to cover your initial expenses serving this client. We can't really call them a client. All right. So I'm telling you that my recommendation is that you view the initial client interview as the meeting where you get hired and you collect some money. I don't care if you collect $1,000, okay? It doesn't matter the amount. It's that they have become a client. They've raised their hand. They've listened to what becoming a client means because they've listened to you in the initial client interview, and they've agreed. They've said, I would like to become your newest ideal client. And then they pass some money. I mean, there has to be, to seal the covenant, you have to receive some funds. Okay. Then comes the very next meeting. This is the meeting we're going to focus on. It's the next meeting after you're hired. It's called the implementation meeting. And don't overthink it. It's just, you tell the client from, this is the meeting where we are from this meeting forward. We're in implementation mode. It's all about execution. It's all about creating a strategy and getting you to execute that strategy. So we're going to move towards getting you on track to all your financial goals, and we're going to get your entire financial house in perfect order, and we're going to keep it that way for the rest of your life. Now, notice that we have this implementation meeting within 2 weeks after you've been hired. So it needs to be quick. Advisors sometimes argue with me about this. Oh, I like to have the implementation meeting 30 days after, or even 45 days after. We recommend that you have it quickly. Client optimism is very high at the beginning for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is the market hasn't had a chance to decline on them yet, because the financial market's moving cycles. So, you know, this is part of the problem we're going to deal with around the emotions of it. And also, you know, as your service unfolds, you know, the idea of aligning your services with the client's expectations, you know, once you start implementing, it's a little bit of a challenge to make sure that what you're delivering is exceeding what the client's expectations are. So before we get into all that and we set ourselves up for, oh my gosh, you know, this client thought, you know, they were going to be receiving some different kind of service from me, before any of that begins, very quickly after you're hired, I'm saying within 2 weeks, it could even be less than 2 weeks, but I think the perfect time is within 2 weeks. You get this on the calendar before they leave the initial client interview. You schedule this. You say, I need to sit down with you within the next 2 weeks. We're going to call that the implementation meeting. And the purpose of the meeting really is, from that meeting forward, we're going to be in execution mode. And I explain this to them in the initial client interview. And I say, you know, let's get your calendars out. Let's schedule this for 2 weeks from now, like week after next. Let's get this on the calendar. And what are we going to be doing in this 2 weeks' time? Well, we need to make sure that we have everything that we need to do what you've hired us to do. So let's just, and you've got a good start on it. You've brought me all your financial documents, but I will promise you this. The first thing I'm going to do after this meeting, and this is the initial client interviews, I'm going to share your financial documents with my team. Now it's your new team. Your team is now going to review your financial documents. And I will promise you there will be some things that are either missing or need significant clarification. So let's just make it a goal that over the next 2 weeks, we're going to flush out anything that might be missing from these documents, and we're going to flush out anything that needs significant clarification, so that in order for us to understand your situation, let's invest the next 2 weeks just clearing all that up and gathering documents. And then when we meet 2 weeks from today, that's the implementation meeting. We're going to go through the process. I'm going to explain kind of how all this works with you. We're going to set the stage for a successful relationship. And from that meeting forward, we're in full execution mode. We're going to make your financial roadmap a reality. And so we're going to spend the next 2 weeks mainly just making sure we have everything we need in order to do that job for you. Okay. So notice this implementation meeting is at the beginning of the client implementation phase. It's kind of before we get up and running. We're going to spend a couple of weeks making sure we have all the documents we need. The thing that your team is going to worry about is, well, wait a minute. If you're meeting with them 2 weeks after you've been hired, you know, what are you expecting us to do as a team? And I'm talking about your subject matter experts and the people behind you, like your financial planner. Like they're freaking out thinking, am I supposed to create a financial plan in 2 weeks? No, I don't expect any significant client deliverables from my team to be, you know, prepared for this meeting in 2 weeks. We relax. We're going to coast through this one, all right? All I need you to do, and this is you talking to your team internally, I need you to go through the client documents and do two things. I need you to tell me anything that's missing. So as you go through all the client documents, I want you to make a list of things, of documents that are missing, okay? And I will get my administrative manager to start working with the client to gather the items that are still needed that you've identified as missing. And the second thing I'd like you to do, and this is to my team, I'd like you to go through all the client documents, and I'd like you to kind of write in the margins or just keep a running note, a memo of anything that jumps off the page at you. So as you're going through, you know, investment statements, as you're going through tax returns and glancing at them, as you're going through, I don't know, insurance policies, whatever the client has brought in, their company benefits, just as you're flying through all these documents and you're just looking through things, I want you to just keep a running memo or write in the margins anything that jumps off the page at you, something that just strikes you as odd, something that strikes you as there's got to be more here. So maybe you've got a few questions about something that they've provided you. Anything that jumps off the page, I want you to keep a running list of what do you need to know from the client about these things. So those are the only two things I'm expecting from my team: a list of items that are missing and anything that jumps off the page. I'd like a note of that. And that's all I expect from my team. So there are no significant client deliverables. The purpose of the implementation meeting is, number one, to establish our roles. I'm going to sit down with the client. I'm going to start with the basics. I'm going to say, here's my role as your advisor. Here's how I view my role. Here's how I view your role. So your role as a client is this, that, and the other. We'll go through that in a minute. I view my role as an advisor, this, that, and the other. And then you say, so how are you viewing this? Like, what do you think are the roles? And this is where you kind of start settling some things up front. And it's also kind of an early warning system where if they're going to start going off the deep end on some issue that you're not aware of yet, something maybe they've had a bad experience with an advisor in the past, whatever it is, you know, this is where this will begin to emerge. And so you're going to clearly establish your roles. Okay. And then you're going to set some ground rules. All right. So this is what advisors I have found, and I was kind of surprised to find this. Over half of the advisors that we deal with do not set ground rules with their clients up front. And so this is a big mistake. It's something that you need to fix. And if you've never established ground rules with your clients as far as how the relationship is going to work functionally or effectively, then you need to reconsider that. And I'm going to give you some things to think about today, but you need to go back and do that. And I don't care how long you've had someone as a client. If you've never established ground rules, I'm going to put it out on the table today. You need to go back and do that, or else you're running into problems at some point. And I don't care if it's been a client for 10 years. If you will pause and do a reset at your next client progress meeting with that client and establish roles and set some ground rules, the clients will appreciate it. It'll be a very illuminating meeting. And because things are calm right now, if they're calm right now, because your client is of a mood to hear this kind of a conversation, you are establishing up front something that when things get tense, let's say the markets drop 20, 30%, which has happened in my career, the client's all emotional, hair on fire. You know, some clients get really worked up about things like that, and they're not in any mood at that emotional moment to set any frickin' ground rules. So this is why you need to do this up front. You need to establish these ground rules while things are not tense. And then you are going to document what the client's expectations are. And again, I would say 80% of the clients, the financial advisors that I work with, in no way, shape, or form ever ask the simple question, what do you expect from the relationship that we have just established? And in our methodology, you're not only going to ask this question at the implementation meeting, you're going to ask this question at the end of every single client progress meeting. In other words, more on that as we go. So let's go through it. Let's talk about starting first things first in the implementation meeting, or if it's your next meeting with the client and you're doing a reset, you're kind of doing the implementation meeting you've never had with them. How do you establish the roles? Love coffee. Okay. You start with your role as a client. So let me just say, I'm going to ask you in a minute what you think your role is, but let me just tell you from my experience, Mr. and Mrs. Client. I've been doing this a while. Let me tell you how I view the role of a client versus the role of me and my team, okay? Speaking on behalf of my team, we want you to focus on living your life. We want you to focus on enjoying your life. We don't want you to focus so much on the money stuff. We've just gone through, if you're utilizing the financial roadmap by Bill Bachrach, then you've just gone through an exercise called the value staircase. And if we recommend, if you are utilizing Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap with clients, that you have this financial roadmap updated and laying on the table in every single meeting. It's a big document, so it takes up a lot of table space, but it's worth it. It is the biggest tool, maybe I should say the most effective tool, at getting clients to refocus on the big picture, like why they hired you in the first place. So you say, hey, you know, on behalf of our team, we feel your role should be focus on enjoying your life, focus on living, experiencing your values that you've shared with us here in your value staircase. And it's your role to ask questions. So yes, you've hired us to handle the money stuff, but that doesn't mean you're not going to have significant financial issues just kind of crop up that we're unaware of. Things in your day-to-day life, things that just, you know, maybe part of your household budget, things that the two of you are talking about that just you're worrying about. It's okay for you to ask questions. It's okay for you, and we expect you to bring up significant financial issues whenever they occur. So we need to have an open line of communication, and I need to be able to trust that your role as a client is to ask any question you have on your mind, even though you're a financial delegator, and we've established that up front. We've established that you delegate, you're comfortable and you enjoy delegating your financial affairs. And we're happy to accept that. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to stay up at night worrying about some financial thing here and there. So we want you to have an open line of communication. Feel free to ask questions and ask anything you want, and bring us every significant financial issue that you encounter. Okay, that's how it is going to be effective, this relationship. And then we given that, you know, you're not abdicating your financial affairs, you're delegating your financial affairs. So you're allowing me and my team to orchestrate your financial affairs, and we're going to do this in a very responsible way. And here's my role and my team's role with you. We're going to meet with you at least once every 4 months. So count on us sitting down for a major client progress meeting every 4 months, like at least 3 times a year. Now, this is where, if I'm doing my job right, we are informing you about your financial affairs at such a high level that you feel more informed about your money stuff than you ever did before, on your own or with other advisors. In other words, the idea of delegating, not abdicating your financial affairs, means you're connected. That means that every 4 months we are sitting down and I am updating you so effectively that you walk out of that meeting feeling fully updated on everything that's significant regarding your finances so that you feel fully informed. There's nothing happening behind your back. There's nothing happening that you're unaware of, that you are more informed about your financial affairs than you ever have been in the past. Now, that's my role, to get you there, keep you fully informed and up to date. And while doing that, it's my job to coordinate all your financial issues and all the financial people in your life. Now, let's talk about that. That's the role. But if I'm going to do that, we have to talk about the relationship, how the relationship's going to work, given the fact that you, Mr. and Mrs. Client, have already some relationships in place. So let me just sort of establish the roles, like what's my role versus the role of the people that you've already got in place. For example, on my team, I have a tax accountant, all right? I've got a tax subject matter expert. And guess what? You have a tax subject matter expert. You've got an accountant that you told me that you've been working with for 20 years. I'm not going to ask you to not work with them. As a matter of fact, they're part of your team. But I need to have a functional relationship with that person in order to do what you've hired me to do. Okay. And let's say you have a money manager. So, you know, if you've got somebody managing your money, well, I've also got a money manager. So how's that going to work? And you've got an estate planning attorney. I notice you've in your documents, you brought me wills and trusts. Okay. Well, that means you have an estate planning attorney that you at least went to at some point. So you've got an estate planning attorney on your team. I have an estate planning attorney on my team. So how's that going to work? And likewise, you've got insurance agents, you've got auto insurance, homeowners insurance, probably life insurance. You've got all this insurance that you brought in for me to review. And so you've got insurance people in your life. So how is this going to work? Let me tell you how this works effectively. And this is the only way it'll work. We call your team the implementation team. They're going to implement the plan. All right. But there's a problem. You don't have a plan. That's the first thing we are going to do. So what's my team's role? Well, my team is the oversight team. Think of it in terms of strategies and tactics, all right? My team was hired by you to fill the critical gaps that are missing in your financial affairs right now. And let's just be real. There is no overarching strategy. So the first thing we are going to do, my team, we are going to create something that does not currently exist. We are going to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, something that your team could have done. You know, you've been working with them for whatever, 10, 20 years. They could have called each other up and created an overarching strategy for you, but they didn't. That's why we're talking. So our team is going to, and we're skilled at this, and we're used to this. It's very common. This is the most common first step with every client, that a plan doesn't exist. So we have to create this overarching strategy. All right. So what's our role? Our role is to fill the critical gaps. We're going to create a strategy. And then what are we going to do? We're going to oversee the implementation of that strategy. And I will just say that without a strategy in place, that you can't even measure success. So the idea of answering the question, am I on track to my goals? You cannot currently answer that question because there's no way to measure success. We're going to solve that. So we're going to fill all the gaps that are currently in place. Now, what is your team's role? Well, their role is to implement the strategy. My tax strategic person on my team is going to reach out to your tax accountant, the implementation team member, and is going to share the overarching strategy. And in essence, communicate with, you know, my tax person is going to connect with your tax person. My money management strategy person is going to reach out to your money manager. My estate planning subject matter expert is going to reach out to your estate planning attorney. My insurance subject matter expert is going to reach out to your insurance agents. And we're going to share with them something that they've never seen and never done. And that is, we're going to share with them the comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy that has been put together to make your financial roadmap a reality. In other words, this whole strategy that we have created is the centerpiece is what you have set as your objectives. So we are focusing on your goals, your objectives. We're creating a plan around all these five areas of finance. And we're going to reach out to your implementation person and share it with them and have a conversation to say, we need to make sure that what you're implementing is perfectly aligned with this strategy now that it exists. So we need you to help us establish the relationship with your team so they understand the division of labor. You've hired us for strategy and oversight, and you are going to maintain the relationship with them to implement the strategy. Sometimes professionals get a little worried that maybe we're brought in to fire them or something. You need to back us up and help me as we reach out to your team members and clarify how this relationship's going to work. And nothing can be farther from the truth. They are important elements of the team. We want to work with them, but they have to be collegial. They have to be willing to be a good team player. They have to be willing to loop us in whenever before they make recommendations to you within their narrow fields of finance. So enough about that. They need to be a good team player. That's their role. All right. So that's establishing the roles. Now let's shift. Now we're still in the implementation meeting, talking to the client. What are some examples of these ground rules that we need to set? Well, I mentioned that we're going to be meeting at least every 4 months. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to get those calendared right now. I want to make sure that we always have the next 12 months of meetings on the schedule at all times. So I'd like to schedule 3 meetings, 4 months apart with you right now. So in this implementation meeting, we get all the meetings for the next 12 months on the calendar now. And be ready for pushback. And this is so silly. I end up in arguments with advisors who are just assuring me the client will not schedule meetings that far out. They don't know where they're going to be this time next year. And they're planning on going with their whole family to Europe next year. And so they don't want to put anything on the calendar that might endanger that. And no. This is a skill. You need to book these meetings and have them on the calendar for 12 months out for your team and for the client. It's not that we can't reschedule them as they get closer. It's not that something on their calendar is so rigid that they have to plan any of their life around it. No, we're here to help them enjoy their life. So if we set something on this calendar for a meeting for a year from today, well, okay, just think of it as a placeholder. If they plan a trip to Europe and they're not going to be around for a month, well, fine. We will move our meeting. No big deal. Let's just mark it tentative for now and let's get it on the calendar and just move on down the road. So we're going to establish the ground rules that we are going to always have meetings scheduled 12 months out. Also, a ground rule. I need both of you there at all meetings. So when we have client progress meetings, it can't be that just one of you attends. No, I need you both there. You both have a role. Now expect pushback. This is the one thing that advisors seem to struggle with quite a bit. And it's where, you know, the client's thinking that they're just cluing you in on something that you're unaware of. And one of the two spouses in this implementation meeting is telling you something along this line. Well, I handle all the money stuff, and it could be either spouse, but they're trying to explain to you. I handle all the money stuff, and they really hate money. So I always do these meetings, and they never attend these meetings. You know, maybe once a year, maybe once every couple of years, they can show up. But I handle the money, so I'll be here in the meetings, and it won't be necessary for both of us to come. No, it's a ground rule. I need you both here. Let me ask you something. Do you consider marriage a team effort? What do you think people answer to that? Like if I were to ask you, if you're married or if you're in a relationship, if I were to say, how do you view your relationship with your spouse, let's say? Is that a team effort? Or is that like just one of you making command decisions all the time? And I'll tell you, when you ask it in this way, the highest probability is you're going to have pretty much everyone say it's a team effort. And I will tell you, if they don't agree that marriage is a team effort, it's a indicator of problem. It's a leading indicator of problems. So let's just assume they're like, you know, the 90% of normal people. Yes, marriage is a team effort. Well, then you both agree that each of you have a vision of your ideal future and your ideal life and what's involved in creating this ideal life together. that you're both involved in that, right? You each have a vision of that. Yeah, that's true. And would it be fair to say that you each have goals and hopefully they're aligned, but maybe sometimes one of you has a goal and the other one, it's not such a big goal for them and vice versa. You would agree that each of you have some individual visions of how your life's going to unfold in the future. Would you agree with that? These are all reasonable things. And when they agree to this, and if they don't, you need to work them through it, walk them through it and get them there. And so then you say, well, that's why it's a deal breaker. I need you both at every client progress meeting. We're only going to meet 3 times a year and I need you both there. Like, period, full stop. No way out. That's it. Okay. So it's less of an issue than you're thinking. And some of you are, it's like no big deal, but some of you really struggle with this. And if this is an issue, you need to contact me. You need to contact me through this system. Explain to me what the issue is. And it can be even on just a single client. Tell me what they've told you. Tell me what you've told them. Just lay out the situation for me and we can work through it. That's what this program is all about. And part of the ground rules is what I mentioned before. When anything comes up that's financially related, something that is a significant financial issue that you're aware of, but maybe I'm not aware of, something that comes up at work, something that comes up at home, maybe one of your relatives needs help and it's like desperate. And, you know, whatever the significant financial issue is, it could be an opportunity to buy a business. It could be an opportunity to sell your business. It could be an inheritance that's on the horizon. Look, even if somebody is alive and healthy, but if they're 80 years old, And you've just been told you're in the will, I'd like to know. That's a significant financial issue that requires planning. Anything that requires money and planning to achieve, or a problem that exists, any significant financial issue, I expect you to share all of that. That's a ground rule. And you need to agree. And oh, by the way, you need to get this from each spouse. You don't just cover it and move on. You look at her and you say, is that agreeable? Yes. And then you turn to him and you say, okay, is that agreeable? You're dealing with two separate individuals and you need to establish these ground rules with each of them individually, kind of as you go through, pause on each one, gain agreement on each one, and then move through them. Okay. And I may need your help. So we're going to take a stab at this. My tax accountant's going to reach out to your tax accountant. I'm going to have you sign an authorization to release information so that your accountant knows, like they've got a document from you authorizing them to speak with us and share information with us. So we're going to get that taken care of, but I may need you to help with this. Not saying that we will, but it's just if they get nervous or if they're just not sure, maybe they think we're here to edge them out for some reason. I've already told you that's not the case. And occasionally, depending on how they react to us having a team relationship, I may need you to get involved. Now, just relax. I don't need you to do anything right now, but at some point, out of the blue, I may call you up and say, in the next day or so, I need to get on a 3-way with you and your accountant because they seem to be struggling with not understanding what our role is. Not that we haven't explained it, they just feel threatened and we need to hammer this out. So I need you to get on the phone and I'll explain to you what would be helpful for you to say. So I'll help you through it. I'll tell you what I need for them to hear from you. And then you can just get on the call with me and let's work through it. And I need to be on the call, but let's just see how this goes. Maybe everybody's collegial and happy and we don't need to do that, but I might need your help. This is where in the implementation meeting, you make the advisor pact pledge. Now, if you are new to this program, there is an entire module that you have access to right now. And if you're not sure how to access it, then you need to contact us and just say, Mark, I have no idea what you're talking about. And our team will show you how to access this advisor. It's called the Essentials of the Advisor Pact Method. So you need to go through that. And this is the meeting. This is it. Voila. This is where you make your bold promise for to do the four things that the more successful, the more sophisticated, the more affluent the client, the more amazed they will be that you're willing to go on record guaranteeing that you're doing these four things. Now, when in our business can you ever use the word guarantee? Well, this is an area where compliance would allow you to do that because you're not talking about anything that you're going to deliver other than you're going to promise to do these things. Okay. And there are things that are completely within your control. Therefore, there is no compliance issue. Not to mention the fact that most compliance officers would view all of what you're about to say in your advisor pack pledge as an outside business activity. It really has nothing to do with investment advice. It has nothing to do with financial planning. It's just a commitment to make sure these four things happen. Okay. And they're service related things. So that's your pledge. You do that in the implementation meeting. And then here it is. While you're establishing ground rules, you're going to clearly establish your fundamental investment principles. Now, this is if you're involved, and this is if you have fundamental investment principles. Let's say, and this is not most of you, so don't get nervous me saying this, but there are some of you that have delegated the money management to a money management subject matter expert that you have hired onto your team. So the fundamental investment principles may not be, in your case, yours. They may be your money management subject matter experts. Well, that's fine. But you're going to convey your money management subject matter experts' fundamental investment principles now. So it just means they're either your fundamental investment principles, big picture, or they're your money managers. Doesn't matter. But all I'm saying is in the implementation meeting, you're going to establish some ground rules around the meetings. You're going to make the advisor pact pledge. Those are ground rules of things that you will promise to do for them and get feedback from them, like what they need for that to be the case for you to be able to guarantee those things. It's all service related. And then third, you're going to clearly establish your fundamental investment principles. Bing, bang, boom. Now, these are three things that almost no financial advisor ever does, but you're going to. And if you haven't, you need to put the relationship on pause, do a reset, and do this at the next client progress meeting. All right. So I'm going to come back and I'm going to focus on that fundamental investment principle. I'm going to share mine. All right. Now you may have your own, you're a money manager, but I'm going to give you an example of mine so that you get the gist of what it looks like. Okay. But before I do, the third thing you're going to do, so you've talked about the roles. My role is this, your role as a client is that. You've established ground rules. We just talked about the third element is you need to document the client's expectations in this new relationship. So here's how you do that. Now you're going to ask the clients what they expect from this relationship, but for the purpose of what? It's to document this. You're going to start a file, an internal confidential file on this client relationship. In my firm, we call it a master one sheet. We just start a Word document. We call it the MOSH, M-O-S-H, master one sheet. And every client has one. And at the top of that is what the client expects from this relationship. So the first thing I do to kick this off, so this is the third component of the implementation meeting, is to figure out what the client is expecting. And I do that by doing something that by establishing for the client what the team goal is. So I've got a team, my team has a goal, I'd like to share it with you, Mr. and Mrs. Client. Now let me pause and just tell you, most advisors don't have a team. Let's just start there. So the fact that you have a team puts you in a category above the average advisor. All right. But advisors who do have a team, which is a small subset of high-end financial advisors, most of them do not have a team goal. In other words, even the advisors that have a team, for some reason, don't go the necessary leadership step next, which is to establish clearly for the team, you know, here's the team goal, so that every member of the team kind of understands what they're responsible for. And so what is the team goal? Well, in our system, we recommend that you establish the team goal as, you know, it's our goal to consistently exceed client expectations. So when I'm explaining this to a client here in the implementation meeting, I go, our team has a goal. Let me share it with you. It's our goal to consistently exceed your expectations. And we have established a very high level of service to assure that. But there's one thing we don't know. We don't know what you expect. So we can be delivering everything that we are assuming that will exceed your expectations. But the problem is we don't actually know what you expect. So I'm asking you right now, what do you expect from the relationship between you and my team? You've never paid, like in my case, I charge $45,000 per client per year. So you've never paid $45,000 for a relationship with a financial advisory team. So now that you have a relationship like this in place, a relationship that needs to function at a very high level, tell me what your expectations are. And then you pause on each spouse and let them talk. I always start with her. Don't ask me why, it's somewhat arbitrary, but I always start with her. I go, so Lynn, start with you. What do you expect between this relationship that we've just established today? And let her talk. And then when she's finished, and you can ask clarifying and probing questions. So what do you mean by that? And what would that look like? And dig into it. So make sure you're clear on what she says. And then turn to him and say, Ted, now that we've heard what Lynn expects from this relationship, what do you expect from this relationship? Like if we're exceeding your expectations, what would that look like? And so in essence, you're documenting this for your team. Now, how many of you have done that? Honestly, be very honest with me and tell me if I were to parachute into your office this afternoon and say, okay, pull out all your client files. Let me see the sheet documenting for your team what that client expects from this relationship with you. What would you show me? Okay. So you're going to document this for every client. And they've answered the question, but you're going to take another run at it. So you've gone through it thoroughly for both. Now you're going to go back to Lynn and say, okay, Lynn, just to be clear. So let's say we're sitting here a year from now. We're sitting at the annual review a year from now. We're looking back over the year and we exceeded your expectations beyond. We knocked your socks off. So what did we do? Kind of walk me through the year. Tell me step by step, what did we do to knock your socks off? And so then get that from Lynn and then say, okay, so we've heard from Lynn. Now, Ted, let's have you walk me through it. So we're sitting here a year from now, Ted, and we truly delivered extraordinary service from in your opinion, not mine, in yours. What did we do? And let Ted walk you through it. So you've done it for each spouse. You follow me? So you're going to ask the same question basically twice, but in a different way, and you're going to get more information. Now, I can only assure you something that you probably have never seen. It's going to be some good stuff. And not to mention, it's going to be things that your team will appreciate knowing, because some of these things are not that hard to include. Like all we need to know is, oh, the client appreciates a little more information when it comes to taxes or something. Like, yes, they're willing to delegate, but here's their little thing that really they get hung up on. And so they start to reveal what they need from you. And once your team sees that in black and white in a document that you've created for them, a running list of what this client couple expects, there's much of this that they can, they don't even have to bend over backwards. There's much of this that they could include without really breaking a sweat. Okay. So the key to this whole conversation is that you are documenting it and you're updating it at the end of every client progress meeting. It's not a conversation you just have once in the implementation meeting. No, you have it in every single client progress meeting. I always reserve 5 minutes in the end of the meeting to ask the question. Now, they may not always add something new, but let's just admit it. Over the course of the year, something might happen to rattle them, make them nervous, keep them up at night for whatever reason. And they're going to be evolving when it comes to what they expect. Not to mention many clients, how many clients, and maybe yourself included, if you're a client of some service company, you know, it becomes, what have you done for me lately? So I can promise you, charging clients $45,000 a year, I can get them all buttoned up and get their financial house in perfect order. But if they're going to continue to pay $45,000 a year, at some point, every client tells me some version of, what have you done for me lately? So I try to get ahead of that by understanding what they expect and delivering on that in advance. I'm trying to be proactive so that they never, so that the thought, what have you ever done? What have you done for me lately? Never enters their mind. My job is to overwhelm them, knock their socks off. And so enough about that. So this is where I really wanted to get in this session. So we have 4 minutes remaining, but I'm going to spend a couple of minutes going through this because I think it's important. So you need to clearly articulate your firm's fundamental investment principles. All right, why? Why? Well, because at the beginning of the relationship, there's never a time in the relationship when the client is more optimistic and enthusiastic. They are looking forward to doing this with you. If you're like me and you use the financial roadmap, they are totally fired up because they now, for the first time in a long time or ever, in many cases, have a clear vision of what they're trying to achieve. Okay. So you're catching them at a calm, optimistic, positive moment in time, the beginning of the relationship. So what have you done? Why do you do all this? You set ground rules. You get agreement from them up front. So when things are calm and they're positive and you say, you know, I need you to share significant financial issues with me. It's critical to our relationship. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. I'll do it. Of course I will. Oh, yeah. Deal done. Consider it done. Okay. So up front, they are very minimal to reasonable requests. You're getting yourself on record. So if down the line, some significant financial issue comes to light and they failed to share it with you, you now have a tool to hold them accountable. The fact that you brought it up front, that you've got these ground rules, then when something kind of falls apart down the road, you have earned the right to confront these things down the road. Okay. I'd say irrational or bad behavior down the road. Right. And when I say confront, I don't mean belligerent. I mean, like, I think the most misunderstood word in our industry is accountability. You're holding the client accountable, but accountable to what? Well, if you're, I don't know what you're client conversion processes, but I've already shared mine is the financial roadmap. It's this inspiring vision on a big piece of paper of where the client is now, where they want to be with their goals, and for the reasons that are important to them, their values. So all on this one sheet of paper, they have a highly inspirational to themselves vision of their future ideal life. Okay. And while that's clear in their mind, you've established, you know, if that's their goal to make their financial roadmap a reality, then these are the ground rules. This is how it's going to happen. It's going to unfold successfully if, and then you go through the ground rules. Okay. But it also allows you to establish your true value. What does that mean? Well, I can tell you this. You don't promise returns. Your true value has nothing to do with investments or investment management. As a matter of fact, the investments are the easy part. What's the hard part? It's the client's emotions. And when it comes to money management and investments, what is your true value in this relationship with the client? Well, it's not managing the money or getting superior investment returns. You're certainly not going to promise returns because you'll get hung on that. You don't make anything about the relationship hang on the investments, okay? It's all about their goals and their values, and you're trying to get them to envision moving towards their ideal life. That's what your true value is. And if you were asked me when it comes to investments or money management, what in that area, because you have a true value in every of all five areas, you know, you've got money management, financial planning, insurance, tax, and estate. So you have some true value that's not immediately obvious, but down the road, it will become obvious to the client that you have a true underlying value that they kind of missed at the beginning. But it's because you set the ground rules, it's buying you the right to come in later and slow things down when things are starting to blow up and remind them of the ground rules and reset the whole relationship and to take problems and issues and emotional outbursts, kind of slow it down, go back to the ground rules, and you've established the right to handle it in a certain way. That's what's going to establish your true value. And when it comes to investments, it's not the returns. It's none of that. Your true value is going to be at some point. It might be 5 years from now. It might be 10 years from now. It might be 20 years from now. But if and when, and I would say most clients, it's when the time comes, they come to you with some foolish recommendation because they are either terrified or greedy. So it's the whole on everything we do is on a spectrum between fear and greed. And I'm not telling you stuff you don't already know. You know this. But when a client comes in and says, oh my gosh, I think the president's going to get us into a nuclear war with Russia. I'd like to sell everything. Okay, it's in that moment. That's where you establish your true value. It's when the client has some emotional reaction to something. And you need to come in as the kind of steady voice of reason that's got a strategy and some principles that are undeniable principles of life that always work. Not just sometimes work, but if history's any guide, they've always worked. So you need to clearly articulate your fundamental investment principles so that when, if ever the client does an emotional meltdown over their investments, you've established a stake in the ground. Here's how we handle things. Now, here's something quickly you need to know about me, something that you may not know. I don't think I've ever shared this in this program, but when I was 11 years old, I was that nerdy kid that maybe you did, maybe you didn't know, but I enjoyed tracking investments when I was a kid. So I've been tracking stocks and bonds and mutual funds since I was 11 years old. And I'm talking about when I was 11 years old, I mean, we're talking about 1969. I was tracking it on graph paper, like with pencils. All right. So no laptop, no computer, nothing like that. I was tracking stocks and bonds and so forth when I was a kid. So I understood fundamental investment principles at a very early age. I knew what it took to have long-term investment success in a long-term investment portfolio where you've got objectives, okay? So the investment basics were very, very easy to me and very clear. But what was the problem? So at 11, I had some money of my own invested for sure because my parents were so entertained that I was doing this. You know, I got into this, but I also did it for my family at 11 and 12 and 13 years old. So what I found was the investment part was easy. Getting the investment structured properly and into the right things, no brainer. That part was easy. But then the members of my family or the friends and neighbors and people that I was advising when I was 11 years old, you know, they'd get start freaking out. So the market goes down or some world event blows up and, you know, oh my gosh, hair on fire. Now I had to deal with them and their emotions. And I did not do it very well when I was a kid. So as I grew up and I got into this business, and I started in April 28th of 1981. So I've been in this business for a long time, but I knew even my first year in the business that the investments were easy. It's the people who are investing. It's the people who have the money. They're difficult. They get all emotional and they try to pull you off track from solid investment strategy and everything. It's just, you know, it's the emotions that get you in trouble. But I had a hard time articulating this to clients, okay? But then in 1989, I discovered a guy named Nick Murray. Now, Nick Murray, he was with a big wirehouse, and I can't remember which one. It might have been Morgan Stanley. It might have been, I don't remember. He was with a big wirehouse, but he was an industry spokesman. And when I say industry spokesman, he was a speaker, author. He wrote articles. Like, I remember every month getting Financial Advisor magazine and flipping straight to Nick Murray's article, because Nick Murray had this, he's still around. He's old. I don't know how old he is. He's slowed down quite a bit, but he used to be at many conferences. I've seen him speak live 7 or 8 times. So he'd speak at conferences. He wrote books. He wrote articles. But what he had a unique ability to be able to do is to articulate these fundamental investment principles in ways that were just simple and understandable by clients. So he helped me articulate my fundamental investment principles. So not completely from Nick. I varied them slightly because I've been doing this since I was 11 years old, but I developed what I share with clients as the 6 investment variables. Now yours may be different, but I'm going to fly through them just so you can hear how this sounds. And I explain to clients, these are strategies and tactics. So there's 3 fundamental investment principles. Those are the strategies. And there are 3 tactics also. And the tactics are the tactics that are required to execute the strategies. So these are the 6 strategies and tactics that are required if you're going to have long-term investment success. And I make it clear that I've studied this going back 200 years. So I can't say that, you know, I can never make guarantees. I can never say that the future is going to be the same as the past. I mean, we're all prohibited from saying that. But what I can say is I've studied this for 200 years, and these principles have sustained everyone who's followed them for as long back as there is tracking to track it. Okay. And we're talking primarily in the U.S. financial markets. Okay. So what are these principles? Let's start with the strategies. They're strategies and tactics. So what are the 3 fundamental investment principles or strategy? First of all, faith in the future. So I'm not going to go into it at length here, but I'm just telling you, I look at the client and I say, you have to have faith in the future. If you don't have faith in the future, we can't work together. And let me tell you what I'm talking about. It's that optimism is realism. And when it comes to world events and the financial markets, that I was born in 1957. This is 12 years after World War II. World War II was fresh on everyone's mind when I was born. Okay. So that's 12 years after 50 million people died in that war. Not to mention the fact that after World War II, and while the year I was born, the Soviet Union, what we now call Russia, was on the ascendance, and they were doing genocide. 50 million dead in World War II, including 6 million in the Holocaust, that, you know, the Nazis executed 6 million Jews roughly, and it was awful, you know, but the Soviets were doing genocide at twice that amount. It's estimated closer to 20 million. So, you know, these are all disastrous things. And then in 1962, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis, and everybody, I know it sounds crazy today, but everybody thought we were going to die in a nuclear war in 1962. In 1963, President JFK was assassinated, and so forth. I go through year by year by year, all these catastrophes where clients would have come to me. And by the time I was 11, my relatives and friends were telling me, I want out because, hey, we're in Vietnam and it's just going on and on and on. Or, you know, the Vietnam War is escalating. I'd like to get out of my investments. And I'm like, what? Yeah. Do you have any faith in the future that these things, I don't know how they're going to work out, but they will work out. So faith in the future has to be your primary perspective, that you don't know how things are going to work out. Okay. You just have faith that given time, maybe decades, everything will work out. So the second fundamental principle is patience is required. So, you know, when something happens, like the very first year I got into the business, I was licensed in March of 1987, you know, got licensed in securities. Well, that October. So I was licensed in March. What happened in October of 1987? October 19th, Black Monday. It was a once in a generation massive stock market crash, you know, Black Monday. You know, I think it was the largest point decline in the financial, in the stock market in history. So horrible, horrible, horrible financial market, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, 7 months after I first got into this business. So what did I do? Roll over? I mean, every client was saying, get me out, get me out. And of course it was after the drop, you know, and I learned something in that year that was a perfect time to acquire clients. When the markets are in disarray, when the economy's in disarray, when world events are in disarray, when clients are nervous, they're willing to fire their advisor and hire you. And you just need to be there and have your ears open and be talking to a lot of people. And you need to be there to receive them. But it seems like when something like that happens, like the market declines, you know, the client is coming to the advisor saying, just like this advisor, today's question, it's like, do something. This is horrible. Don't you see we're about to get into World War III over Ukraine? You know, you should be doing something. You're my financial advisor. Don't just sit there, do something. So in the implementation meeting, at the beginning of the relationship, you set the ground rule. You say, look, you have to have faith in the future and patience is required. And what does that mean? That means that when emotions are at their highest and you think that something needs to be done, it's almost always the case that nothing should be done, that the best strategy is to stay the course. If you've got an extraordinary strategy implemented, like a high quality, extraordinary long-term strategy in place, why would you do a knee-jerk reaction because you got emotionally either fearful or greedy, you know, fear and greed? So how are you going to let emotions enter into this long-term equation? Well, the answer is you don't. And so I have a little bit different, more on that one, but I'm just giving you a taste of this. And the third principle is discipline avoids mistakes. So what does that mean? That means when the markets drop, we're not looking to sell, we're looking to buy. In other words, whatever money we're scrounging up that's in cash, we're actually, now that everything's like on sale, we're looking for really things that 10 years from now, you're going to look back and think, oh my gosh, I can't believe I picked up all these, you know, our portfolio 5 and 10 years from now is flourishing because of good decisions that were made back during an emotional period in the markets. And so those are the fundamental, this is what I call the strategy. So this is the strategy. Okay. So what are the tactics? What are the tactics required to implement the strategy? And I don't go through this with every client. I kind of hold this in reserve. And it's only if one of the two spouses are just geeking out on all of this, and you can tell that they are not going to be able to sleep at night unless they have a little more meat around the bone. And I'm telling you, out of 10 clients, 7 don't care. So I open this up, not talking about the six principles. I just say, let me go through the three fundamental investment principles that we need to be on the same page with. And either we're on the same page on those three fundamental investment principles, or we can't work together. We have to agree on the strategy big picture, or park company. And it's a fork in the road. But there are a handful, I'm going to say maybe two or three out of 10 clients that they're insistent to know a little bit of more meat around the bone. And so number one tactic for implementing those strategies is you have to understand that when you're at the end of your life and you're looking back over your life and you're thinking, okay, I had this successful investment portfolio unfold beautifully over the long term. Where did my returns actually come from? Was it timing the market? Not just no, hell no. What was it? Was it dollar cost averaging or some of these other kind of weird terms in our industry? No. When you look back over your life on over the success of your portfolio, well over 90% of the success of your portfolio will be attributed to the asset allocation. So it's how we allocate your assets, how much, you know, stocks and bonds and cash and within the equity markets, which is stocks, you know, how much large companies, small companies, mid-sized companies, growth companies, dividend companies. So it's how your portfolio was allocated that's going to actually end up delivering the returns ultimately for you. And you have to know that. So that's a tactic. So you got to get the allocation set in a high quality, solid way that's suitable and appropriate for what you're trying to achieve. In other words, we're tailoring your asset allocation around you and your objectives. Okay. Second tactic, diversification is what mitigates risk. You don't mitigate risk by when the market declines, you sell everything and now you're sitting in cash and now you got to make a timing decision when to get back in. That's emotion. That's disaster. That's failure. What mitigates risk or what reduces risk over time is diversification. So you're not just in one investment, you're in 10 or 12 or 20, you know, you're in quite a few investments. So if one investment is not doing so well, you know, the theory is, and history shows that if you're allocating properly, there are other portions of your portfolio that are diversified that may be countercyclical. So, you know, when you look at your investments at any snapshot point in time, some things are doing well, some things are not doing so well, and then these things are kind of moving around over time. And so what reduces risk? It's the fact that you've diversified. You're not having all your eggs in one basket, is the cliche. And then finally, your commitment is to buy low and sell high. And that's kind of funny conversation with the client. Like, how is that a tactic? It's kind of like a, well, duh, you know, but this is my opportunity to introduce the miracle of something called rebalancing. And I'm going to explain to them, you have this allocation of, you know, equities, meaning stocks, and you've got your ownership in great companies. You've got bonds that are debt from these companies and from the government, and you've got cash sitting on the sidelines at all times. And then within these great companies that you own, you know, some are big, some are small, some declare dividends, some are just growing like crazy. At any point in time, they are at a different point in the cycle. And we are going to sit down periodically throughout the year, you know, two or three times, we're going to sit down and say, wow, look at that. These investments in your portfolio have just shot up remarkably. And oh, by the way, here's some things in your portfolio that are down, they're struggling, but they're high quality. So you certainly don't want to get rid of them or anything, but they are like not doing so well. So when I say rebalancing, we're going to pare back the things that are doing extraordinarily well back to the way what percentage they should be in your allocation. We're going to pare it back to the dollar amount that it should be in your allocation. And we're going to take that money and we're going to deploy it to buy more of the quality investment that's maybe struggling and is a little bit better price point now. So it's this constantly, it's not exactly selling high and buying low, but it's that principle. You're paring back things that have overachieved and you're putting that money in things that have underachieved and therefore they're less expensive. And so this is your, I need a commitment from you that you're not going to come in with a recommendation to, you know, sell low and then buy high later. That's crazy. And so these are the tactics that are designed to execute the three strategies. So what just happened? Going through that. This conversation, by the way, takes about 10 minutes with a new client. All right. So what have you just done by going through your fundamental investment principles? Well, you've set some ground rules. You've created a fork in the road. They have an opportunity to opt out, say, nope, if you're going to manage my investments that way, I'm out. They can leave. They can say, I'm not in for that. I like market timing. No. I follow this newsletter. This guy, you know, he tells you when to buy things. And my brother-in-law gives great investment tips here and there. So whenever my brother-in-law buys something, I like to buy something. You're like, well, we could talk more about that as advisors, how to handle those situations. But in essence, it's a fork in the road. We have to come to an agreement that you agree to these fundamental investment principles for the serious money that is going to be focused on achieving all your goals. You know, if you want to carve out a little Las Vegas money that you could either go to Las Vegas and lose it and you play in blackjack, or you could put it into your brother-in-law's stock tips. Okay, well, we can maybe talk about that. But when we talk about achieving your objectives, you're signing on to the fundamental investment principles. So you have set the ground rules and you've gained client agreement up front, because you don't move forward until you gain agreement. You don't leave that meeting with a kind of a wishy-washy, well, I'll think about it. No. I need to know. If you need to think about it, that's fine. But we're gonna have to put the relationship on hold until you've thought about it. And oh, by the way, what do you have to think about? You know, what is it that you know, make your case? So really the burden is on them to make their case, how what they're doing, they've got to provide some sort of data or substantiation as to whatever they're proposing is better than these, what I can't legally say, but I'm telling you, are undeniable truths of investing. Like, what could they possibly come up with as a long-term strategy that's going to trump what I just went through? I mean, it's just, okay. So you've gained client agreement up front, and you have now earned the right to confront irrational behavior down the road. And there's the key. When things were calm, when things were optimistic at the beginning of the relationship, you've said, here, we have to agree that this is how things are going to be done. And part of the ground rules are establishing your fundamental investment principles, gaining agreement to that. And then when they come 10 years later and they say, I think the president's going to get us into a nuclear war, I'd like to sell everything, you can slow things down, say, You remember that meeting we had? It was the second meeting after you hired us. And we sat down and I sort of went through, you know, your role and my role, and here's some things that will make this relationship effective. We had a conversation about the fundamental investment principles. Do you remember this? And there were three fundamental investment principles, you know, and you walk through them. You say, I'm calling a flag right now. I want you to slow down what you're saying. And I want you to think about the commitments that you've made to your own long-term, to your financial roadmap. I want you to think about creating the highest probability of actually achieving everything that you've shared with me on your financial roadmap. And so you have now earned the right to confront all this emotional behavior and to waylay them from making really the worst decision that they will have ever made in their investment career, which is to sell a perfectly suitable, high quality portfolio that's on track over time to the goals, where there's a plan in place and tactics that work, and to just flush the toilet on all of that by talking them out of that right there, you've established your true value in that moment. That the real value is not managing the investments. It's focusing on their ideal life and managing them. Get them focused on their ideal life. Get them focused on enjoying life. Get them to commit to letting you worry about the money stuff, and get them to agree up front to the manner in which you're going to be managing their money. And I'm not saying your fundamental investment principles have to be mine, but they have to be something that allows you to do this. And that is whenever a client is fearful or greedy or proposes something stupid, that you're able to slow things down, reset, and recall the conversation. I've even had two clients where I had to replay the recording from that meeting where we talked about it because they just literally could not remember this conversation from years and years and years and years before. But thankfully, Bill Bachrach has all of us recording all of our meetings, which I'm sure you are. I pulled the recording out for these two clients. And of course, in my case, they were on cassette tapes, but whatever. We went to the part where I was walking through the fundamental investment principles. So the implementation meeting, you can have this refresher of the ground rules at any time. So if you've got clients where you need to reset and set these ground rules, make it the next client progress meeting with that client. Rerun the implementation meeting, like just do it in the middle of your client relationship. I don't know if any of your clients are like this one that sent in the question this month, you know, hair on fire type client, whether they are or they aren't, it's always a good time to sit down and sort of reset the relationship and just have a refresher on what we have either agreed to up front or you're establishing these for the first time, which if you haven't, I'm hoping at this point, you now see that you should. Okay. Well, that's it. All I've got for this month. I do want you to assess your progress in this program. Do you have all five subject matter experts in place currently? If not, you should be connecting with me and telling me what the obstacle is, because that team can be in place in 30 days or less. And if it's not, you need to tell me what you're struggling with because you're off track in this program. Have you required each of your subject matter experts to create an annual checklist? In other words, these are your custom deliverables checkpoints that are designed to deliver the 10 client deliverables that we lay out in this program. So have you required your SMEs to create each of them, each of the five SMEs, to create a thorough checklist of everything that needs to get done on an annual basis in order to deliver truly comprehensive financial services and the 10 client deliverables. When you're doing an overarching strategy and that's all you're doing for a client, are you charging $20,000 or at the very least not below $10,000? Okay. Because we have a methodology that we've mapped out. We can show it to you. Like, here's what a plan needs to look like for a client that's paying you $20,000 to create the strategy. So what does a strategy look like that a client is willing to pay $20,000 and agrees that it's worth that? Well, that's what this program is about. And you need to work with us to get that in place. And don't charge too little. Do you have all three meetings? Do you have all the meetings in the three meeting process booked 12 months out right now for all your ideal clients? And has every subject matter expert provided a minimum of 10 impressive client action items for each ideal client over the last 12 months? And is your administrative manager even tracking this? If not, you need to get with me and tell me what the obstacle is because you're off track if that's not happening. And how many ideal clients have you acquired over the past 12 months? I mean, I'm not asking that you acquire as many ideal clients as I was acquiring like more than two per month. But are you at least acquiring one ideal client per quarter? If not, you need to connect with me and you need to tell me what the obstacles are. So, you know, the bottom line is, are you receiving unsolicited client referrals? Because this whole program about delivering truly comprehensive financial services at a level that's going to consistently exceed your client's expectations, it's all just for one reason, that you're receiving more referrals from your clients on an unsolicited basis that you have a hard time keeping up with them. So are you receiving more referrals than you know what to do with? Well, if not, you need to connect with me. And oh, by the way, we use a lot of lingo in this program, like the three meeting process and the initial progress update and all these different, like all this lingo. And if you or your administrative manager get confused on some of our vernacular, you can always go to mastery.link and make a copy of our lexicon. Every term that we use is on there. And I recommend that everybody download that and keep it so that you can always have kind of an encyclopedia of what does Mark mean when he says, you know, ideal client profile or whatever. So anyway, and oh, by the way, should your administrative manager sit in on these monthly Q&A workshops? Absolutely. I think you're missing an opportunity if you don't have your administrative manager sit in or listen to the replay of these sessions. And what's my best advice for you if you're not already doing it? Like right now, single, simple piece of advice. Like, what's the one thing you could do to really energize your business? Well, I have provided you with a tracking sheet for your business activity. And it's to invest the 5 minutes that it takes to complete that and update that business activity spreadsheet every single week. And there's a payoff to you. If you will agree to update this every week, then I'll be able to see very quickly, like over time, like where you're struggling. Like, what point of your business is there a problem, or do you need help, or you're struggling? And imagine, I can tell all of that if the only thing you do is spend the 5 minutes that it takes to update this business activity spreadsheet every week. And if you don't know where it is, contact us. We'll send you a link to yours so that you can find it if you can't already find it. And then last but not least, I've probably mentioned 30 times today, what are your obstacles in this area, that area? That's the whole purpose of this program. You go onto any of our systems and click Contact Us, and there should be a link that if you have a technical question for my team, like I need another module, or I'm trying to find something in the system. Like if you have just a technical question, you can just type out your question and my team will get back with you. But if you have a question for me, it should be clear on Contact Us. Click this link and just leave me a message. It'll take you to this screen and you just click start recording and you just spend a couple of minutes explaining to me what your issue is, your obstacle. I need to know. I need to hear you explain to me where you're struggling. And if you'll do that, I can promise you forward progress, because you're going to be making a big, bold pledge to every ideal client. You're going to be making your advisor pact promise. And so, that makes you the only game in town. Imagine that. You're going to be, of all the financial advisors in your community, and we've got data on this, the chances of a client finding another advisor willing and able to do these four things is statistically zero. Okay. And so you need to master the advisor pact pledge, and you need to promise that you're going to, in the implementation meeting, or if you failed to do it at this point, with every client, you're going to make this advisor pact promise. And I say ideal clients. Okay. So you're not going to promise these four things to non-ideal clients, but for every ideal client, you're going to make this advisor pact pledge. All right. That's it for this month. As always, we wish you all the best in implementing. And until next month, I'm Mark Little.